Good morning. I'm Mike Duff, contributing editor at Homepage News and your host for the Inspiration Theater. In our session, When Growth Breaks Leaders, the Invisible Leadership Failure Point, and How to Get Ahead of It, Christine Sams, Creative Planning Business Services, will provide insights into what happens when leadership systems fail to evolve at the pace as product demands develop. Breakdown can begin quietly long before financial results show stress. So operators who recognize the early warning signs can act to keep decision, quality, execution, and team performance up to speed. And if you please.
All right. Welcome, everyone. Thank you. Good morning. So revenue is up 36%. Retail expansion is secured. Headcount doubled in 14 months. Cash is tight. Inventory is building faster than forecasted. The founder hasn't taken a real day off in 14 months. Nothing is broken. But the margin for error is narrowing every quarter. That is the invisible fracture point. Growth rarely collapses because demand disappears. It strains because decision load accelerates faster than decision capacity. Capacity scales, governance lags. Most teams do not recognize the shift until the financial stimulus behavior has been signaling fed lights. Today's session is about that shift. We're going to look at where decision weights is concentrated, how to spot structural warning signs before margin erodes, and how to redesign your leadership systems so growth distributes pressure instead of centralizing. This is not about motivation. This is about architecture. If your revenue is expanding, the real question is whether your decision structure is expanding with it. Before we go any further, I want you to be leading this session today. Leslie, would you be so kindly kick us off?
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for attending today's session. Cheery for the future, and I've been at Freeman Planting a lot with Christina L. Develop educational training sessions with IHNT like Lori, Sean, and Peter. If you're not familiar with creative planning, we are an integrated ecosystem of personal and professional services that help individual businesses and owners grow with confidence. Our multidisciplined team works together so each element of your wealth and business works harder together. We deliver tailored guidance for every facet of your business. I have over 25 years of experience working in the manufacturing and distribution space. And we are working with IHA as a cohort to develop training. And so Christy will just give you a sample of how her training works with all of you. Today, I'm happy to be a part of this system. And we'll introduce Abby, who's part of ours.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to today's session. Christy has such a great presentation. So happy you guys are all here. I'm Addison Hendrickson, a business development rep. So I support Christy and Leslie. And yay, let's get this started.
First thing in the morning, everyone's still waking up. Thank you, Leslie. Thank you, Addison. For those of you I haven't met, I am Christy Sands. I come from an operator background. I have owned local companies as well as invested in several of them. I have 20 years of experience, both as a CFO as well as a COO, inside businesses, but also consulting with them. I have had the pleasure of going around the country, speaking to IHA members from New York to Chicago to Texas to California to Canada to the Southeast. Different companies, different products, but the exact same issues. Today, I work as a virtual CFO and operational advisor for Creative Planning Business Services. I am brought in when the pressure is hot. I am brought in when companies are looking to expand and scale. I have 18 years of experience as a turnaround professional. So I go into companies and I rebuild them. If there's acquisition taking place, they will typically bring me in post-acquisition work. If there's an entity that we need to dissolve, They bring in to liquidate it. If there is an entity that is having issues from a fire perspective, they typically call me a firefighter. What I mean by that is I come in when the stakes are extremely high. And when they need somebody who understands both sides, most CFOs, looking at it from a CFO perspective, very rarely do they look at it from the operations perspective. I look at it from both sides. But also, too, being an operator, I have a very unique skill set. So, yes, I have several certifications. Yes, I have an MBA. However, I always tell everybody, none of those taught me anything that only a business didn't teach. So I am extremely happy to be here with every single one of you. My goal today is not to overwhelm you. However, I am told every time I present, it is like drinking from a water hose. So please enjoy. Here we go.
Because
what I consistently see across product businesses is this. Revenue expands, complexity multiplies, but leadership systems remain as structured for the previous stage of growth. That misalignment is where fragility begins. And it doesn't begin with financial collapse. It begins with incision weight quietly increasing faster than the system can absorb. Here's what changes as companies grow. Revenue increases, but consequence of multiplying. A pricing error at $2.5 million may cost you $40K, but $25 million, that same category of mistake, compounds across inventory commitments, channel mix, receivables, and retailer customer accountability. The mistake is the same. The multiple is that. Now, most teams prepare for revenue scale, but very few prepare for decision scale. And when consequences expand faster than leadership structure, pressure begins concentrating to very predictable places. One thing operators eventually realize is that growth multiplies three things faster than expected. Decision frequency, capital exposure, and cross-functional dependency. When those expand faster than leadership structure, pressure concentrates. Here's a tip. If revenue doubles, define who owns the next 10 decisions before hiring the next 10 people. If you wait for EBITDA deterioration, you are way too late. The early signal is the behavior of your employees within the organization. Pricing debates stretch because cost assumptions are unclear. Founder overrides increase. Forecast accuracy softens. Inventory begins rising ahead of model demand. At this stage, executive meetings start lasting longer, but the decision somehow gets slower. And when you look closer, accountability is no longer clear. This is not incompetence. It is capacity mismatch. Financial strength typically trails leadership strength 2 to 3 quarters. By the time your CFO is alarming the bells in the financials, the behaviors that have created this have already been there for months. Take a $10 million company. Monthly sales are approximately 800 grand. If forecasting is wrong just by 20% for a couple of months, 2, 3, 4, that can easily create $500,000 of excess inventory as well as $200,000 of margin exposure before we even recognize the patterns. The mistake is the same. The exposure multiple is that. Now, most teams, they use the P&L as a dashboard. By the time it moves, the exposure has already been created. Instead of waiting for EBITDA to confirm stress, run a simple forward exposure snapshot every month. Ask 3 questions. First, how much future cash is already committed through inventory, promotional spend, as well as receivables? Second, how sensitive is a margin difference of 5 to 8%, even 10, 15, 12, pricing to volume variance,
and to channel. It hurts you.
Third, how dependent is forecast accuracy on one or two individuals within your companies? This shifts the conversation from historical performance to forward vulnerability. You stop asking, how did we do? And you start asking, what have we already locked in? The P&L is the past. I love us accountants. We always say, we don't create the news, we report the news. This is why it is incredibly important to do exposure modeling so that it protects your future. Here's another tip. Add up all the dollar values and inventory, by order, promotional commitment, and receivables. Compare it to next quarter's forecast. If exposure exceeds 60% of expected revenue, leadership is already behind risk. I do not want you to answer these questions. I just want you to notice your internal gut reaction to the bad reason. The goal is not perfection. The goal is awareness. Are your decisions systemized? Or is it personality dependent? Is pricing authority clear? Or does it escalate up by default? Can margin be modeled quickly, or does it require assembling information from multiple spreadsheets? I'll give you an example. This I have a client right now in some of the product list. It's 17 years. I took a full load analysis operationally as well as financially. Over 100 documents we sent to me in a 2-week period. 47 of them tied into March. 13 of them is the actual documents that was used to do the analysis. However, I had to deal with the CEO, director of operations, assistant director of operations, the finance manager, the third-party CPA firm, just to do this exercise. If that is what I have to deal with, can you only imagine how long it takes them to process financial and operational information to be able to move the needle and make a decision? 2 weeks, 100 documents plus, and get into margin. Although, of course, only 13 was relevant. The point of it is that I had so much of the information fragmented that we couldn't get into the thing that has the most value: contribution margin, margin, net profit, money, cash. Absolutely ridiculous. 17 years old company brought me in to look at exactly that. Now I pre-took all of that, created one report, and now I'm going to move to the next important thing: training the entire team how their information impacts the report. So that we use one point report every single month, and we put together a matrix to go behind it to move the deal. If you can't do that internally, you're going to have the same issue that that company has the last 17 years. And by the way, the owner just put in another $300,000 to the company because she's not profitable, because she doesn't have good data to make good decisions in a timely fashion. Although,
trust me,
they're well over a $10 million company. Does he sound right? Do you have defined working capital tolerance? Or are you reaching cash movements, or are you reacting to cash movement in real time? She came to me, actually, exact same client. She's like, Christy, it's a good month. I didn't have to put in more money. And I thought to myself, oh, that is the worst comment that I ever could hear. I have got to train her 100% not to be bought with business like that. So some accounts, they'll do a 13-week forecast. I think that's a peak way to do it. I do at minimum a 36-week forecast. I want to know how I'm going to be impacted for the next 9 months. And also do that 36-week forecast is not any typical CFO. We put it there. All my cash to sleep is 30 grand. Oh, that's a great little nothing. The point of it is that it's hundreds of transactions that is put in there on a daily basis. I know how much money I need for 9 months. I also have built it in a lot of cushion. So my surprises aren't like anybody else. Same client actually called me. She's like, Christy, I got to make a payment of $49,000 immediately. And I thought to myself, we don't actually have it. Now, of course, they do have cash, right? We have to allocate it for a lot of other things. And I thought to myself, how in the world are you coming to me last minute, knowing that you had to make a $49,000 payment to a supplier? So what did I do? Went to accounts payable, don't see it. It's on the book transaction. How can you run a business all with this off book transaction? You can't. The point of it is taking all this information, having good data that has to be systemized. So what am I doing now? I'm going back and I retrain every single person in the company, not about accounts payable, trust me, that's based on worries, but it is about what it is actually like from a decision perspective. What information do everybody need to know within the organization so we can run it properly? Creating key employees is definitely without creating decision gridlock. I have another company. It's been in business for about 11 years. There's an individual that literally knows every single thing about that company. And believe me, the CEO is so proud. Prestige knows everything, is the person to go to, and this person can do everything that you need, and get to any report. And I thought to myself, the executive team is 11, the sub team below it is about 3 cars. And then, of course, I got 8 other 50-plus employees. And you mean to tell me that I have to go to one person for every single thing that I'm looking at? Here. Absolutely worried. What if that person leaves? Right? What if this is, so you have to build systems to support the business and not around employees. We don't build businesses around an employee. We actually hire people to support the systems within the company. If growth depends on specific individuals absorbing stress rather than distributing it, you are operating in a fragile phase. That is nothing that you're failing. It means that your architecture has not yet caught up to your scale. I'll give you another example that's tied to this. There is a company that's looking to scale, that are looking to actually purchase 3 additional companies. We have a post-acquisition plan for this one. And the very first question that I asked him was, great, did you put together not only a post-acquisition plan for the next 18 to 36 months, but what about all of the integrations that tie? Or to see, what do you mean? We just looked at the software. Then, okay, great. Did we look at personnel? Did we look at software? Did we look at operations? Did we look at reporting? Did we look at all the financial pieces that are tied to being able to run those initial 3 companies? Well, yes, we did analysis. I can come through. Where is it in writing? Well, here's the pre-investment. It's, documents, and here's everything that's tied to it. I said, absolutely not. I said, the first thing that we need to do is to stop. We need to have all of our executive team in one group. We need to look at not only the acquisition of that, but how is it going to affect every single area of the business. And we need to plan for that. So I actually had to buy a whiteboard. And I thought we used to get the wall prayers we might put. Then I had to buy 2 additional ones. I put a sign on it on the outside that said war room. And they're like, Christy, war room, what are you talking about? Well, I'm ex-military, so of course I always told my war room. But it's my strategy group. See, I mitigate risk because I'm thinking 2 to 3 to 5 years down the road. I'm not thinking 3 months, 18 months, and I don't care if it's a $2 million company or it's a $150 million company. That is what is required to run a fucking business. So I recommend everybody to buy a lot of my boards. I worked with a founder whose company grew 7 million to approximately 16 million over 2 years. Now, on paper, it looked incredible, but inside the business, it was extremely chaotic. Cash conversion stretched from 62 days to 89. Gross margin drifted from 41%, to 36. Inventory commitments expanded farther in future quarters. Every major decision ran through him. Retail negotiations, pricing approvals, hiring sign-offs. At this point, he wasn't just the CEO. He was the pricing committee, the capital committee, and he also actually was the emotional support department for his own company. He came to me and he said, Christy, I feel like I'm holding the whole company up with one hand. That is not fractured. That was fractured. It is not ego. It is not incompetence, but it's what I call concentration. We redistributed the authority, defined capital guardrails, we modeled channel margin in real time, and removed about 30% of decisions escalating up to him. Within 2 quarters, forecast accuracy improved. Margin stabilized. The meeting short. And for the first time in 17 plus months, he actually got some sleep. That is what is the biggest achievement. It is not the reporting, it's not more money to the bottom line, but it's protecting the operator. So growth doesn't break the business, it breaks the operator. I'll give you one additional story. I own a company about 5 years. We actually expanded to a global import and trade different countries. We ID'd 90 plus products in a 15-year agreement to form the largest ingredient companies in the world. I had 2 offices, one in Naperville, Mill, one in the city big building before the water down. My car was put with dry some water. We hired about, I don't know, 30 plus salespeople all over the country, had broker contracts, you name it. In fact, this entity was the entity that we sold the intellectual property in the first company 5 years. The new one was only in business for about 1.5 years, is valued at $25 billion. And so I think back to every single thing that I built. Now, again, I was the operator, but I also too was the CEO, and I was the interim CFO, so I brought somebody in. And I think back as fast as we were moving, I didn't focus on the sales. I didn't focus on the cash. I focused my system. I made sure day one, before we even opened, that I had a whole lot of ERP system. I had every ticker, my products, pricing, you name it. I had forecasting for every single channel. I spent more time on screening the staff than I did on building the company. Because as soon as I got that kind of Walmart contract, I only made the decision to sign the agreement, and I made the decision how to fight incident. But I was not responsible for making sure that the inventory dispatches, that it was properly forecasted, that we had the promotions set, that I had the RMCs, the coupons, everything else, the goose lip. My team was trained to scale, and not the same one. And it actually is the reason why I was able to get $8 million credit line in 1.5 years, and it wasn't because of the sale. It was because of my infrastructure. And at the same time, we actually purchased 4 other companies and took over them breaks that weren't doing so well. So can you imagine how much was going on? What is my job? My job is to think big and check. My job is to make sure that you finance everything, right? We're all those times. But when you are responsible for that check, and trust me, the stress is absolutely brutal. In fact, there were nights that I didn't even sleep, right? Because I knew there were international suppliers. I got employee issues. But I always think back, the universe, you know, really good job. Not on building a major company, but I did a really good job on building processes and systems so that my teams could think for me. That is the goal. That is the reason why we were successful. Now, retail and wholesale, they do not create structural weaknesses. They amplify it. I worked with a wholesale brand that added 3 regional chains and grew revenue by roughly 45% around 21 months. Inventory grew 65%. Accounts receivable stretched about 26 days. Cash conversion definitely baked it for that. The line of credit shifted from backup support to daily operating needs. Nothing appeared like them on the outside, but internally, every system was straight. OTIF, for those who don't know, on time and zone decision pipe. Cash conversion grew increasingly. Cash conversion grew increasingly because I was sensitive to even small forecasting errors. Yet pricing architecture had not evolved. Every other part of this process evolved, except for the one thing that actually makes it more sense. So promotional modeling was still instinct-driven. Capital exposure had never been scenario tested. Retail growth looks extremely exciting. on the rapid fire, but it also introduces a lot of operation promises that leadership teams have to do every single week. I call that, not operational promises, but I call that operational strength. And I actually talked to them, I think I was coming to the hype team. One of the things that I talked about was having sensitivity and empathy for cross-functions. And the moderator actually asked me fair, he said, Christy, I've heard of empathy a lot. I've heard of this a lot, but I've never heard of it in the context of business, right? Well, trust me, I'm brutal at negotiations. I love negotiations. I can't wait to do negotiations. But I can tell you that is only important in the business side of things. I have, and I teach my team to have empathy for other departments. I can't stand it when a CFO pulls a report and everything is on the list. And they just call people, we're going to start ready, next line is right? And then you got your sales team will say, absolutely not, what do you mean? They've cut quotients. And I've already given into this. Then you got marketing saying, what are you doing? We just spent 9 months creating this campaign and not even
cut quotes.
It's because the teams don't have clear understanding of how the other functions work within the business. That is critical. When I talked about my company and I talked about building structure, that is the very first things that I did. I train every person in a leadership position to understand what their decision does and that. In fact, I told a couple of other HA members, my partner actually was a contract sales guy on distribution. In fact, he's been doing business for the last 20 plus years. He is a $25 million contract guy. I brought him in because of that. However, I had to teach him to understand from a capital perspective, what that $25 million contract means, right? It's a $1 million credit line contract plus a lot of other things. His thing was to see this property and to sell. How really do that? I said, well, now I brought you in as a partner. So by the way, you're not just selling, but you're actually buying such a $25 million contract. Let me teach you what that means. So please make sure that you're very conscientious when we talk about empathy and cross-functional, and teaching your team how their decisions impact everyone else. Your promise in retail, we always promise a couple of things, right? We promise delivery timing, inventory availability, promotion and support, and pricing consistency. Each of those promises, again, have operational exposure inside the company in multiple departments. Here's a tip. Ask your team to model the true margins of one retailer. And it puts promotion, freight, return, a whole bunch of other things. If it takes more than 48 hours, the system is not ready to scale. I actually did this, we brought in the
third company.
I called two individuals to the company and I said, I need to create a report. I gave exactly what I want. I wanted to see not only how long it took, but what was the data that they were using. So, it actually took a little longer than 48 hours. I think it took about 3 days. And they sent me a couple of reports. And I was like, absolutely not. Because again, I'm thinking scale. I'm thinking I'm going to sell this business. I'm thinking if I'm bringing an outside person to audit my operation, what is it going to take to move the deal? So I had to go back. And believe me, I got a lot of work now. It's stop and restructure the information, retrain. Because again, why? I'm still. So when that next contract came in, they had to know exactly how to think about it. They knew the impact of it, and they knew what was required to do good data, you know, to report back to us as an executive chief. So please have your team do this. It is more than work. At first, you could feel a little bit like, here she goes again, always testing us. I'm not testing them. I tested the process in the company. And by the way, I've asked you and teach you both to think outside the box. A lot of people just do, but they're too afraid to actually think more of what their task is to how it impacts the business. And trust me, that's at the CEO level, CFO level, director level, all the way through. We are very good at tasks, but we're not as good at strategy. This pattern repeats more often than most teams realize. At stage one, revenue grows rapidly. Headcount expands. Inventory grows faster than sales. Margin drifts slightly, but is fractionalized is my favorite word, investment. I actually was on the phone with a client yesterday, was late for money. But Christy is going to invest. And I said, oh, okay, great. Well, you just stop paying yourself the $16,666 like, sure, pay it every month to go into investment. Does this make sense? And she was like, oh, then it's for the future. See, we have to grow. I said, no, absolutely not. What we have to do is stabilize our
business.
We have to definitely think about the investment piece of it, but we also have to analyze what the investment cost is and what I'm going to get for it. But there is no way that I'm going to have any company think about major acquisitions, because major acquisitions add to the revenue, but they add complexity to every other thing. And trusting what I tell you, they can work $500 an hour to lawyers, right? To all these operational people, to consultants, to all of this, to tell them the exact same thing that I tell you. Please, 18, 36, teach your teams to think past a quarter. Teach your teams to think past a week. If they're not saying in a meeting what the impact is financially, operationally for 18 months, I actually stop the meeting. I say, guys, let's end the waste archive. Go back, think about it, present something to me what the impact is in 18 months, and then we'll breathe. We'll look at this again. So I cannot waste time if I want them to do and to teach them and get them to understand what those impacts are. The assumptions are investor at stage two. Sorry, I digressed. We got excited. Retail expansion increases. Commercial commitments and forecast misses widen. The assumption becomes we just need better forecasting. I can't tell you how many times I defer that. But I can tell you, forecasting is not the root cause. The root cause is structural ambiguity. Decision rights are unclear. Channel margin is not modeled with speed or depth. Working capital tolerance is undefined. Authority is still concentrated at the top. Growth has expanded exposure, but governance has not expanded with it. Now, by stage three, cash compresses. Hiring freezes, executive friction starts to happen, and key employees start to exit. Revenue is still growing. It happens. Trust me. Which makes this situation extremely deceiving. But on the surface, the company appears healthy. But underneath, it is anything but healthy because the entire operating system is under strain. Now, there are four structural gaps. Across three-stage companies, four gaps appear repeatedly. First, decision ownership ambiguity. Meetings are frequent, but accountability is unclear. Second, financial translation gap. Revenue strategy advances without equal modeling of cost and cash. Please listen to that. When we do modeling, we always focus on cost. We are brilliant at it, but we never focus on cash. Third, the talent maturity gap. Leaders are promoted for success in a simple environment, and then they are asked to operate in a more complex one without expanded authority. And finally, leadership over centralization. Critical judgment remains concentrated in one or two individuals. You can usually tell that this is happening when the same issue appears in three different meetings before anything is decided on. So growth requires distribution of judgment, not delegation of tasks. If strategic decisions must wrap for a narrow set of people, scale has stalled. This is the 5-minute decision clarity tool. If you want to test whether your decision ownership is clear, try this one in your next debate. Take one active cross-contribution and write it down. Then draw three columns on the whiteboard that you're all going to purchase. You're going to write out there who recommends, who decides, who executes. If the room hesitates for more than 10 seconds for any one of those columns, you have ambiguity. And ambiguity, excuse me, creates escalation. And escalation creates bottlenecks. And bottlenecks create frustration. Clarity reduces meeting time, but more importantly, if you're actually able to hold people at home, Next one. The decision look audit. In most companies, I audit 60 to 70% of all the cross-functional decisions in companies escalate to the CEO or founder. When the number crosses roughly 30%, decision speed slows and being loaded expires. Here's a quick test. Think about the last 5 major decisions that you did at your company. I want you to ask yourself, how did you leave quiet? You potentially as the founder and or the CEO, if you're not the founder, to intervene at any point. I recommend doing this once per quarter. You count the material cross-functional decisions per week, not out who makes the final call. You flag decisions that are made, again, without forward financial modeling. I can't tell you how many times teams come to me and they're not thinking about what's the forward impact, not just financially, but from a risk perspective. I have a free little certification about risk mitigation, right? Companies, right? Companies pay me to come in and build out a risk program. I can tell you the risk is in every area of their business. And quite frankly, it's more costly than even looking at some of the things that's tied to bringing a product overseas, et cetera. We have to look at the risk. So track the escalation rate and the override frequency. When escalation rates start climbing, the organization usually has to notice it immediately. What people notice first is that their calendars are filling up. Growth should disperse judgment. If it centralizes it, the organization has not yet evolved fast enough. Do a decision flow audit. For most teams, I promise you, it only takes a max of 2 hours, right? Per quarter, 8 hours a year. For 365 days, that is not a bad return on investment. I was actually talking to Lori this morning. Everybody knows the ROI, right? We all know that. How many in the room knows the ROI? Who used that in your business? Raise your hands. I know it's early in the morning, or just shake your head. Yes, sir. COI is cost of inaction. I never talk about ROI when everybody does. I talk about COI. What is the cost of inaction? Not to make a decision, but more importantly, what is the cost by not just making the decision, but what the impacts of it financially as well as operationally. Here's a simple diagnostic we use in leadership teams. Take the 10 most important decisions your company made in the last 30 days. Now, place each decision under the name of the person who made the final call. 2 patterns should appear immediately. If 2 things dominate the board, decision power is centralized and leadership capacity is strained. If 4 to 6 leaders are making the decision within a defined authority, the organization is starting to scale. Capital boundary framework. Oh, I guess I gotta go. I think that was it. Thank you. Capital boundary framework. Most executive teams debate growth without predefined limits. When thresholds are undefined, urgency and personality fill the gap. Capital boundaries answer 5 questions. How much working capital straight is acceptable? How low can the margin go by channel before it impacts areas of the business? What level of promotional exposure is tolerable? When hiring is burned by contribution, what leverage range is quoted? When those answers are explicit, debate becomes mathematical. It does not become personal. Boundaries do not slow growth, they actually stabilize it. Capital boundaries are not about restricting growth. The exit, they exist so that growth decisions are made deliberately rather than emotionally when pressure increases. Here's a tip. Growth requires financial boundaries. Ask your finance leader, CFO, controller, third-party bookkeeping company, what inventory growth ratio is acceptable? What is the minimum margin per channel? And what leverage is acceptable? If those limits are not written down, decisions become emotional. I ask the team every quarter to do that.
Exactly.
And I can't tell you how many times every single person has a different number. Every single person has a different understanding. So we all get to the room. We all sit there, word out, strategize, and we come up with the exact same number. So when they walk out, they know what they're holding accountable to do. That is an extremely important exercise that we don't do. I'll give you an example. I asked one of the director of operations, what is the denial rate? 7.5%.
Okay.
Then I asked the CPA, this is with the bookkeeper, what's the denial rate? 5%.
So she is clean.
Then I asked the assistant director, what was the calculation?
6.7%.
I said, wow. So I got my financial saving one thing. I got my director of operations doing another thing. And then I had, of course, the other individual who was carrying the director because they believe the numbers. We stopped immediately. Now, I can tell you, every single person is doing 7.5%. From a forecasting perspective, financial rate planning, et cetera. Now, one way disciplined companies protect themselves during growth is by establishing trigger banks. A trigger rule means that when a teammate crosses a predefined threshold, the decision process dramatically changes. For example, if inventory begins growing more than 1.5 times revenue, purchasing costs, it requires cross-functional review before additional inventory is approved. Trigger rules ensure that growth decisions remain mathematical again instead of emotional. Now, here's a test. If you stepped away for 60 days, what would actually happen? Would pricing discipline hold? Would capital allocation remain consistent? Would margin protection weaken? Would customer confidence shift? Would bills start to be late? Here's a tip. If you took 60 days off, which decisions would stop entirely? Those are the rules you haven't structured yet. The cost rarely announces itself. It appears as executive fatigue. Turnover is explained as quote unquote time. Margin compression is disguised as revenue momentum. There are reactive layoffs, retail or not, but the deepest cost is internal. It is trust erosion. But the stuff is quiet. When clarity weakens, people hedge. And when people hedge, execution slows. I've seen companies lose their strongest employees, and it is not because of compensation, I can guarantee it. It is because decision chaos made their role unsustainable. If you want to act on this immediately, make 3 months this quarter. First, please run a decision audit log. Excuse me, a decision for others. Second, define at least 3 capital boundaries in writing. Third, map out decision authority on your most volatile revenue channel. What most leaders discover is that the problems I have been speaking about during the session rarely exist in isolation. Decision mode, capital exposure, and leadership strength tend to appear together. That is exactly why we created an exclusive cohort for IHJ members called the Operator Leaders Cohort. Rather than keep naming the problem, I want to show you the space we created to actually work on it. This is not a webinar series. It is a working room. It is designed for people who own the real decision and feel the executive strength. The goal isn't more process. Most leadership teams don't need more ideas, I can tell you about it. They need a structured place to work through the circuits. It's a sharper operating judgment without adding complexity. The cohort runs virtual sessions 90 minutes each. This is not passive content. This is focused working time. Each session is built around real decisions from companies and liberty. They are not hypothetical cases by any stretch. A participant will bring a live issue they are navigating to the cohort, and the group will work through it together. I will teach where topics need more depth, as well as structure. My role is to help you structure thinking and to introduce the frameworks that we discussed today and many others. We will work through and only get one question, but how do I know whether our catch time is timely or structural? And who on the team owns the inputs that determine that answer? Over 6 months, we'll talk about operations, we'll talk about marketing, we'll talk about sales, we'll talk about finance, we'll talk about working capital, we'll talk about investment. Yes, we'll talk about every single reporter of what I can get, but then that's correct, right? To teach you to scale your businesses. Now, whether you join a cohort or not, the real takeaway today is this: growth does not create companies first. It concentrates pressure inside leadership, demand expands, metrics multiply, exposure lengthens, its governance does not evolve at the same pace as scale and pressure compounds. The question is not whether the complexity is coming. It is whether your organization can absorb without centralizing. Growth is predictable. Breakdown is optional. Thank you for your time today. I'm Christy Sales, and I work alongside leaders navigating exactly these inflection points. If anything I discussed today raises a question about your own structure, capital boundaries, decision load, I'm a resource to IHA community, and I'm also willing to continue the conversation. We also have a short executive diagnostic tool at the chairs. Please do take it. If you have any additional questions, please don't hesitate to come up directly. Mike, we're going to spend a couple of minutes or we'll be finished. Sir. I'm going to take some water because I talk a lot. That's it. I know it's early, and I know I did you with a lot.
So, do we have any questions in the audience?
Yes, we're ATF. It's very well spaced.
Thank you, Chris, very much for just all that key information. This is a little bit more on the side of not finance and all of this, but when you go into organizations, how do you break through the ego at the top or at the operator's level? And how do you foster vulnerability so that you do get what you need to get the teams moving in the systems that you described?
So I'll say it best with one sentence. Respect is earned, it is not commanded. I have fired hundreds of consultants, trust me, in my time. I actually did a global brand sell for Love Radio, created a joint venture with Starwood, and liquidated 17 entities into 5 companies. And I could 1,000,000% tell you that a lot of those consultants told me what we needed to do without actually understanding the dynamics of the business or the individuals. And at the same time, didn't even understand the complexity of what we were dealing with. So when I go into companies, it never is about the CCOs. It is never about how smart I am or how many degrees I have or all of these certifications. I want to know the people. I want to understand exactly what is going on in their business so that I can make effective change. Now, I will say this. Very first step that I do is I collect information. I do have some meetings with the internal staff, but I can tell you, before I even do that, I request documents. Now, when I said 100 documents, that's not an exaggeration. I request every document within every single department that has any materiality about this, and then I give away them. And then my conversations are not about what they're not doing. The conversation is about do I have this understanding correct? Is this how it affects your department? Is this how it does X, Y, and Z? That changes the landscape 100%. I'm not coming in as an expert. In fact, honestly, I think that's the help. If anything, I'm a newbie. I don't know anything about their business. They go to birth their teams, 12 years, 9 years, whatever the case may be. That helps. So you really have to tailor your ego map. Now, yes, I have achieved management certification. I trained in that, but it's just human basic. Yeah, I built a lot of things, and I've had a lot of pride in everything that I can build. So when somebody comes in, they as the expert, I'm thinking, dude, you weren't there at 11 a.m. or you definitely weren't there at 2 a.m. when I had to make 15 phone calls to do X, Y, and Z. That is the way that I do it. I always let the data speak first. Numbers don't lie. People do. An emotional piece, and that's why I spent so much time on the emotional piece of my presentation, is because, again, my job is to get them to understand the data and their care. So, Lori, did that answer your question? Okay.
Well, thank you. Awesome.
We have other questions from Wayne's. I'd like to is.
Okay. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Good luck on the show.
And this is about recognition. I understand that IHA has this problem. And I'm not sure if it applies to what should I be getting these boxes? Should I start to think about this? What do I have to recognize about my business to say, you know what? I need to motivate myself to get involved and to deal with these issues. Gil, how would you say the person should start in that process of recognition?
So I'll tell you, this recognition doesn't actually come from the business side of it. It comes from the personal side of it, right? We all hold ourselves to a certain standard. And I can definitely tell you there are things, no matter how successful that we are, that I want to work on this, or this is the impact to it. But the first thing is I always ask people to look at internally, one of the things that you're struggling with within that organization, not necessarily so much as the operator, but potentially you're the director of sales, potentially you're on the promotions, like you're on marketing, the VP, et cetera. So you always have to look at where am I strongly, but also too, how does that impact the business? And what is it that we want to work out? Now again, numbers don't lie. So that's a very easy one. Most of the time we have cash constraints, right? That's the very first thing that I think that most of the needle. But I will definitely say that I think 99% of this and 99% of the way that I build the cohort is not of this.
That's the component.
It's about the people aspect of it. My job is to train, to develop, to get them to see how they impact the business within whatever it is that they're doing. And so that's the key thing about this one is I'm not just teaching about subjects. I'm teaching them to understand their strengths. And a lot of people say weaknesses, right? Christy, what are your weaknesses? I bet every single personality test that you could ever imagine done on me, I don't look at mine as weaknesses. I put myself in opportunities that actually expand, but highlight my quote unquote strengths. But my weaknesses are not weaknesses. They're only weaknesses who that affect your organization. I'll give you an example, just 2 seconds. I was a CFO for several years. I could people call me and say, hey, Chris, I got a CFO that's retired. It's a company 15 years, so it's nothing to build. I was like, well, did you look at my background? You will absolutely hate me. I will come in, try to make changes. I'm going to try to get you to scale. I'm going to do an acquisition. I'm going to pull crazy things. You haven't done it in 20 years. What makes you think you want to do with that? So I teach individuals to be very self-aware of how they fit in the organization, and that's what was the deal. Did I answer your question, Mike?
Yeah, and just as a second element to that, I wanted to ask, what are your differences, again, appraisal and in approach when you're dealing with a family company, an entrepreneurial company, a small business that's established, or a mid-sized business that is, looking into continuous growth? Are there some fundamentals that are different, and how do they wind up coming together to get and success to be one?
So I have been every single one of those environments that you just talked about. I either turn around at a medical manufacturing supply company. He owned it for about 3 years. His daughter worked there for 17. They actually hired me to teach her to be an operator, to be the CEO and to take it over. I was in there 11 months later, I fired her. Now again, I didn't fire her if I didn't like her. I convinced her and the owner that that was not the appropriate place for her to be. Now, every single thing about that business under her leadership was suffering in every single way. And it's not because she didn't have the capabilities. Yeah, I could have taught her the mechanics behind business. But quite frankly, she didn't even have a desire. So, that's one situation. Another situation, a company looking to scale is drastically different, right? They're all about Schrodinger. They're all about getting as much money as possible. So then what do I have? I have employee issues, right? Employees are like, I don't want company to scale. If, hey, I'm going to agree that I'm working, 20 plus hours more every single week. So I have to deal with the employees even less of them scaling. Not because I don't want them to leave you while I get through it, but because I actually need them there and a lot more of a reason for just that. So every single one of these has some major complexities. A lot of people want to get into PE, right? They want to get into venture capital and all this wonderful things and invest. And all I think to myself, if you only know what it's really going to take. You built your company for 20 years, they come in, they start dismantling it. I know because I can dump. I take certain pieces of what I like. I keep the operator there for 3 years underneath shackles. And then they can even make decisions on their own business they built. So each one of these has a major complexity. But that's the cool thing about this. Is there's always, you can deal with the vehicle impact and aspect of it. So you're going to get much, much more than it until we look at the data. That's the hint of mine.
Is there any questions? If not, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you for coming.